Welcome back to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now, it's quite a privilege. We are going to talk with distinguished journalist Jerome Corsi. If you read WorldNet Daily, you follow a lot of his work, and he's written some best-selling books. And in fact, the one we're going to focus on right now, since November this month of 2013, marks the 50th anniversary of JFK, his death. We're going to talk with him about his book, Who Really Killed Kennedy? Jerry, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay. First of all, I've got to ask you this. Why another book on such a famous assassination, that of John F. Kennedy?
Well, I think a new book because there's new information. We've had releases. There's now, I think, 5 million pages of information. It's not all released yet by the government on the Kennedy assassination, but you know, since the public has been aware of the assassination, there's, I think, much more evidence than ever that the Warren Commission was a complete whitewash and that Lee Harvey Oswald was the patsy, like he said he was, not the lone gun assassin. And I thought the book was warranted really to get the issue in a current form in front of the American people.
Wow. So you read through then lots and lots of pages that most Americans have never even seen.
All right. I spent lots of time in the archives in Washington and have reviewed the pages. I've really been studying the assassination for the 50 years since it happened.
Yeah.
And have kept current with the books that have come out and the various articles, but intensively I've studied it in the last couple of years to get current. And there's a lot of information that the American people are just not aware of.
All right, well, let's get right to it. Who do you think killed John F. Kennedy?
Well, I think it was a plot that started with the CIA, and I put the blame with Alan Dulles, who was the former head of the CIA, who was fired by Jack Kennedy right after the Bay of Pigs, because the CIA essentially lied to Kennedy and tried to force his hand into committing a U.S. naval airstrike on Cuba to save these CIA mercenaries that were lyingly presented as if they were freedom fighters invading Cuba. And Kennedy wouldn't do it. Right afterwards, he fired Alan Dulles, and I think that began a sequence of events where Kennedy did not break up the CIA into 1,000 pieces like he threatened to do, and the CIA ultimately got back at Jack Kennedy, not just for the Bay of Pigs, but for refusing to fight the lying wars the CIA wanted to fight in Laos and then in Vietnam. Kennedy was in the process of pulling out U.S. troops from Vietnam.
Well, okay, now let me ask you this. I have read about some of these things. I've taken the time to, you know, listen to Gerald Posner's book on tape about Case Closed, and he's saying, hey, it was Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, that's the end of the story. But I will say this. I saw a documentary, and it was very poorly done, but it was made shortly after the killing. And all these different eyewitnesses said, hey, there was definitely shots from the grassy knoll. And that contradicts the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman from the fourth floor or whatever, the sixth floor, whatever it was, from the textbook depository. Tell us what you think happened on November 22nd, 1963 in Dallas.
Well, first of all, there were a lot of witnesses that said they heard shots and a lot of activity going on behind the grassy knoll. These witnesses were ignored by the Warren Commission. They were not called to testify. In fact, the films of the assassination show that immediately after the shooting, the people in Dealey Plaza rushed the grassy knoll. That's where the majority of people thought the shots came from, not the Texas School Book Depository. And when Jack Kennedy came into Parkland Hospital for medical treatment, of course, Parkland Hospital was a world-class hospital, and it was a hospital that was the closest. All the doctors who examined Kennedy came out, and in fact, in a press conference, told the press that the shots were from the front, that there was a neck wound in Kennedy that was a puncture wound about the diameter of a number two lead pencil. That's a puncture wound that would have been an entrance wound, and the back of Jack Kennedy's head was blown out in an exit wound from a shot from the front. Now, these are the doctors who had just seen the body, and they didn't have any theories or arguments or, you know, background one way or another to know who was going to be framed or who was going to be a suspect in the assassination. They just reported what they saw, and that testimony, I think, is highly credible. The doctors who were in attendance were very experienced. When Kennedy came into Parkland, all the physicians, the surgeons in the hospital at that time were basically called to the emergency room if they could be of any use. And the physicians who attended Kennedy were not just interns. They were highly qualified, experienced physicians who understood emergency room procedures and had seen gunshot wounds before. So I take very credibly the testimony at Parkland Hospital that Kennedy was shot from the front.
Okay, let me ask you this, just to kind of give us a quick scenario here. What do you think actually happened? How many people were involved? Tell us what happened, you know, around noon on November 22nd in Dallas.
Well, the evidence is that there were at least probably three different teams of shooters. Certainly that many people have been identified. I've named them in the book. There's even on the record a French assassin from the OAS who was Corsican, a guy named Sutra, who was picked up in Dallas, arrested on November 22nd. He was definitely there. The Immigration Naturalization Service just released him. They didn't even investigate him. And others who, you know, I've mentioned in the book and go through in great detail. But the analysis of the Dealey Plaza, the best shot from the sixth floor window would have been when the car was coming down Houston Street and making the hairpin turn right below the sixth floor window when you had a full body shot on Jack Kennedy sitting in the back of the limousine. Instead, we're supposed to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald waited until Jack Kennedy was down the street on Elm Street, and all you could see was the back shoulders and head, the back of the head, in a car that was, you know, retreating from you. And it's a very difficult shot. The angle, you're squeezed against the window. It's a very low window, less than a foot off the ground, and only opens about a foot. So you kind of have to be kneeling, squeezing your left shoulder into the corner against three pipes, take a very awkward shot with a Mannlicher bolt-action rifle that has to chamber each round, mm-hmm. and you're shooting at the farthest distance you've had when you passed up shots from the JFK's car coming straight down toward you. But you know, the professional snipers who I cite in the book make the point that once that turn is made, then the limousine has got to go through a killing zone. It's got to go through the triple underpass, and shooters positioned much closer to the triple underpass have a very direct and close shot as a headshot, which is much more head-on as the limousine advances down Elm Street towards the triple underpass. It's the only way that makes sense. Otherwise, you know, this is not an arcade game. Oswald's not going to get more points if he waits to take a more difficult shot. All the ballistics, there was the paraffin test done on Oswald showed he had not fired a gun. Oswald said he was a patsy. The evidence is he was on the second floor throughout the entire shooting. And the American people don't realize the Warren Commission had credible evidence before it. A memo documents this from Lee Rankin, the chief counsel, that the Warren Commission knew Oswald was a agent with the FBI. He had a FBI number. He was making regular reports to the FBI. He was being paid for those reports, $200 a month. And he had a CIA number, and there was a CIA file on Oswald being maintained in the section of the CIA that kept files on loyal defectors to the Soviet Union who were double agents trying to penetrate the KGB as military trained by the CIA. And Oswald fit into that category. And there's documentation, again, as I say, in the CIA and the FBI, which the Warren Commission knew existed and lied about, decided not to tell the American people that documentation existed.
Well, wait. If half of what you said is true, it's almost like, well, gee, everything we think we know about the Kennedy assassination is not accurate. But as I said, if you do watch interviews of people who were there, who were eyewitnesses, they do say there was shots fired from over there by the grassy knoll where there was a fence back there. But is it possible, and I've heard that, well, maybe let's suppose Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone shooter, which is obviously something you don't believe in, but if he did shoot, then there would be an echo or ricochet sound that would make it seem as if it came from the grassy knoll, and then meanwhile the smoke from the shots fired up there on the textbook would float down and be seen in the realm of the grassy knoll. I don't know. I haven't read all of the words of the Warren Commission. I haven't had the privilege yet of reading your book, but I do know that this is something that people have gone through in great detail. And by the way, I've actually visited that site a few times. It's very interesting.
Well, the testimony the people gave had nothing to do with echoes or ricochet sounds through the... For instance, you have the Newman family, the husband and wife with their two children. They were probably the closest to Jack Kennedy. They were right across from Jack Kennedy on Elm Street waving to him when the first shots rang out, and the Newmans testified they heard and felt the shots come right over their heads from the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
They were ignored by the Warren Commission since it did not fit into the Warren Commission's predetermined conclusion. The Newman family was never called to testify. And that kind of selective examination of the evidence, which the Warren Commission did, now fully documented, is one of the reasons why the Warren Commission has been suspect to those of us who have studied it for 50 years. Now, you've got a great deal of apologists going on trying to convince people that the government story is true, but they've not looked at documents, which I suspect you have not looked at,
right?
Which would be, for instance, Nicholas Katzenbach, Assistant Attorney General, writes a letter to Bill Moyers in the early first two or three days of the Johnson administration, basically saying, we need to constitute a commission to say that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole gun shooter, so we put an end to all this speculation. And then there's another memo that came out from Cord Meyer in the CIA, which has now been made public, where Cord Meyer at the CIA advocates paying journalists to propose that the Warren Commission's conclusion was correct and ridiculing anyone who says otherwise. And you probably don't know that the CIA for decades has been had run a program called Operation Mockingbird, where they were paying journalists going back to the 1950s to parrot the CIA line. And some of these journalists were some of the more famous of the time, including people like Joseph Alsop, who was a very famous columnist in the 50s. When this information came out, it was shocking to those of us who studied it, because you had the CIA paying journalists to lie to the American people. And it was continuing with the Warren Commission.
That's amazing. What are your thoughts about the Oliver Stone movie, then, JFK?
Well, Oliver Stone, I think, did an excellent job, at least in waking the American people up to the fact that the government had lied. And the government has been lying to the American people. And, you know, again, anyone who's been spent any time in the archives, again, most people are not aware of not just the committees like the House Assassinations Committee or the Church Committee, which in the 70s studied government operations, that the CIA, going back into the 1950s in Guatemala, was running coup d'etats, assassination programs, in conjunction with the mob. We assassinated any number of heads of state and lied about it. In covert actions run by the CIA, in a model where there was a patsy developed. That patsy model was developed by the CIA in an assassination in Guatemala. The CIA did to preserve the business of a banana company into the Eisenhower administration. It's fully documented. Some of the players were the same players. E. Howard Hunt was involved in training the CIA army that invaded Guatemala as if they were freedom fighters, and E. Howard Hunt trained and was involved in training the mercenaries that attacked in the Bay of Pigs. All CIA lying operations that, again, are fully documented on the public record, but you have to take the time to either know the records in the National Archives or to read the books that have reported on this.
All right, we're talking right now with Jerome Corsi, and we're talking about his book called Who Really Killed Kennedy? This is a WND book. For more information, what, WND.com?
Yes, and the book is available on, you know, Who Really Killed Kennedy on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and bookstores. Bookstores will get it for you. If they don't have a copy, it's Jerome Corsi, C-O-R-S-I.
All right, very good. Tell me about the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald did defect to the Soviet Union and then stayed there for about a year, worked in a factory, didn't like it, picked up a wife there, and they moved back to the United States. But you're saying, no, he was a CIA operative or an FBI agent or something like that?
Well, see, you've got to spend time, again, studying the records, because double agents look as if they were defectors. And Oswald was certainly playing the part of being a communist almost so well that it was transparent he was acting. He went around broadcasting to everybody that he was a communist, even in the Marine Corps before he defected. Well, you know, this, again, is not the typical pattern of behavior, broadcasting that you're a communist, especially in the 1950s, when communists were suspect and were being hunted down by, you know, Joe McCarthy in the Senate, but yet Lee Harvey Oswald, if you view his behavior as one that he was recruited by the Marines and by the CIA to defect in order to become a double agent, well, Oswald may have convinced the KGB that he was working for them. Certainly the, you know, getting a wife, all the favored treatment Oswald had in the Soviet Union is indication that Russia thought that he was on their side. And you could have had Oswald playing both ends against the middle, as double agents often do, where Russia thought they were sending Oswald back to the United States to work for them, and we thought we were getting Oswald back to the United States to tell them the KGB for us. And that's the problem, is that just because Oswald said he was a communist and defected to the Soviet Union will only mean something to someone who's unsophisticated in how intelligence operations work and have worked in the post-war period.
Who were other shooters involved in this?
Well, as I say, I think, you know, the one that I name in the book that was most, I think, positively identified was Roscoe White. Roscoe White put on a Dallas police uniform and can actually be seen in the film after the shooting behind the railroad yard. He was
the film.
On the...
The Zapruder film?
No, the Hughes film. There was a guy named Hughes who took some film
of
the assassination, and also behind the railroad yard, and Roscoe White appears in that film without his, you know, a police uniform, no hat, no gun, the exact way that witnesses like Beverly Oliver, who saw Roscoe White there at the Texas School Book Depository shooting from it was a parked Honest Joe vehicle, a very well-known vehicle from a pawn shop. He was positioned by that vehicle. Beverly Oliver knew Roscoe White very well because she danced at the Carousel Club, the strip club Jack Ruby owned, and Roscoe White's wife danced at that club, too, and sang at that club. And in fact, there's pictures of Roscoe White's wife auditioning with Jack Ruby, and you can see that, you know, they clearly knew each other.
Wow.
And Beverly Oliver said that Roscoe White was there and that he was a shooter. And again, as I say, I think there's photographic evidence that Roscoe White was there, and I also believe that DeForest Sorrell, who was the Secret Service agent in Dallas, in charge of the Dallas office, was on to this before he was taken off the case by Washington.
Wow. Okay, so one shooter then is Roscoe White. Another would be the Corsican that you mentioned.
I think there were probably three teams. I think there was a team of shooters in the Daltex building behind, Elm Street. And then I think at least one shooter or two shooters on the grassy knoll.
Mm-hmm.
And the shooters involved a spotter and also radio communications.
But you don't even think, you don't think Lee Harvey Oswald shot anything at all?
No, he didn't shoot a thing. Nothing.
But they found that gun, they found that rifle on the fifth floor or sixth floor or whatever.
Well, see how easy it is to fall for this.
Well, if you go to the museum, they show you all that stuff.
Let me explain to you how you were just taken in. Oswald had a wallet dropped. Somebody at the Tippit shooting dropped a wallet. And this was Oswald's wallet. Well, shooters don't drop a wallet. And this wallet was like a dossier in it. It had Oswald's identification from the Marines. It had this A. Heidel identification. Of course, as soon as they got this, the Dallas police, they traced down Alex Heidel, and they found out a Mannlicher Carcano mail order and a snub-nosed revolver had been bought from a mail order weapons store and delivered to a box office. Now, Oswald said he didn't know anything about it. He didn't own a rifle. Of course, that could all be a setup. Could all be somebody using Oswald's name and buying the weapon, getting it at the post office box before it ever came to Oswald. Oswald maybe, likely, never knew anything about it. The weapon didn't have his prints on it until after he was dead. And the rifle that was initially found in the Texas School Book Depository, fully documented and announced to the press by the Dallas police, was a Mauser. The Mauser disappeared once they had Oswald in custody and found this A. Heidel identification, and they substituted this rifle. The rifle was stacked over between some boxes, and by the way, there were not three cartridges found. There were two cartridges found by the window. Captain Fritz of the Dallas Police Department picked up these two cartridges. He put them in his pocket. He put them in his desk drawer. When the Warren Commission wanted to find them, they wanted three cartridges. So Fritz found these two. They added another three, and the exhibit in the Warren Commission was a faked finding of three cartridges that was never the case. I can show you the evidence forms in the Dallas Police Department that list two cartridges were found, not three. Three were invented later on.
Huh. What about the magic bullet?
Well, again, bullet number 399 was found on a stretcher in the Parkland Hospital by an orderly named Tomlinson. After very thorough research, it was indicated and clearly proven that neither Kennedy nor Connolly had been on that stretcher. So there's no chain of evidence that ties that bullet back to a body. The body, you know, the bullet was supposed to have gone through Jack Kennedy's back and exited his neck on its way to hitting Connolly. The bullet's pristine, even though it broke a rib and a wrist bone in Connolly, which is highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the back wound, which was discovered at Bethesda, was one of the doctors of the autopsy put his finger in the back wound, and it only went in about a quarter of an inch. There is nothing in the medical record to indicate any path was ever determined for a bullet transversing Jack Kennedy's body. There is no medical evidence for that at all. There's just a cockamamie theory proposed by Arlen Specter as an attorney to try to make it work, but there's no medical evidence it ever happened.
You know, it's funny. I always knew I couldn't trust Arlen Specter, certainly as a senator, but I never liked Earl Warren either. And in terms of when he was the Chief Justice, he did so much damage to this country in terms of school prayer and, you know, Bible reading at school and things like that. But why did Earl Warren just kind of rush this whole thing through? Was he being forced to kind of make it out quickly and come to this conclusion?
Well, again, if you read or study Lyndon Johnson's telephone conversations with Warren Commission members have been recorded and are now available. And Johnson was pressuring the committee. I think Johnson knew about the assassination, was involved, was happy to let it go forward. Kennedys were going to replace Lyndon Johnson. The week after trip to Dallas, a major article was going to appear in Life magazine. The second of the articles on the Bobby Baker scandal, it most certainly would have ended Johnson's career, I believe. And Johnson was saying, if we don't conclude this Lee Harvey Oswald, we don't do this now, we don't get it done quick, you know, we could be at war with Russia, because people will suspect he was communist and Russia was behind this. So Johnson railroaded. There were three of the Warren commissioners who did not want to sign the final report. Huh. They didn't believe it. They thought it was completely a lie. Russell Long said this until he died. Hale Boggs. These were very credible members of the Warren Commission who said the entire thing was a ramrod job and that they did not believe that there was an adequate looking at the evidence or that the conclusion was verified.
Wow. We only have about 4 minutes left, and this is so fascinating to me. As we're talking about Jerome Corsi, author of the book Who Really Killed Kennedy, what important things need to be said in the next 4 minutes?
Well, I think if you read Posner or Boglosi, you've got to understand you're reading apologists for the government, and they are very selective. You know, for instance, I've been on radio interviews with Posner. Posner says, well, the doctor who, you know, Dr. Crenshaw, who, you know, wrote books and said that the wounds were front wounds, he said, well, he wasn't in the hospital, he wasn't in the emergency room. Well, that whole argument, Crenshaw sued the American Medical Association for republishing Posner-type arguments, and Crenshaw won. He was there. He saw it. Or they'll say, well, Dr. Perry, one of the attending physicians at the in Parkland Hospital, changed his testimony. Well, Perry only changed his testimony after he was badgered, and then Arlen Specter asked him hypothetical questions at the Warren Commission, like basically, well, if in fact pigs could fly, do you think pigs could fly? He said, well, yeah, if pigs could fly. If pigs had wings, I guess they could fly. Well, pigs don't have wings. And Perry could not retract the fact that he initially came out of the emergency room in Parkland and told the press those were front entrance wounds. That is his best evidence. That's the best reaction before he was pressured to conform with the government's cover story. So, you know, there's still enormous pressure. And, you know, it's a wonderful story. You know, there's nothing communist, defected, cheap mail-order rifle, kills the most powerful man in the world. It's, you know, it's the reverse David and Goliath, an evil Goliath. Mm-hmm. Evil David kills the good Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all nonsense. It's a fairy tale. If hard evidence looks, if we really examine the hard evidence, it was a coup d'etat manufactured by the government and successfully covered up by the government, and even today capable with some very effective press, who I would not be surprised to find out are being paid by the CIA, still are propagating this lie that Lee Harvey Oswald was the assassin. Lee Harvey Oswald was the patsy like he said he was. He didn't shoot anyone. I don't think he even owned a rifle. And those pictures of him in the backyard, as Lee Harvey Oswald said when he was being interrogated, were his head superimposed on somebody else's body.
Wow. All right. Again, Jerome Corsi, the name of the book, Who Really Killed Kennedy. We have 30 seconds left. Do you want to say a concluding thought?
Well, I mean, I encourage people to look at the evidence for themselves and not simply to rely on Bill O'Reilly's kinds of books, which I take as propaganda, written very poorly for a low-educated audience that isn't going to critically examine what really happened. If you want to really understand what happened, read more than one book. I'd encourage you to take a look at a book like Who Really Killed Kennedy, and to get into the evidence yourself. You'll quickly realize that the Warren Commission was a complete government cover-up whitewash, and if you believe Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone gun shooter, you've just been taken by government propaganda, which has been going on since the CIA was created.
50 years. Okay, Jerome, thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye now.